Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we have crossed a huge milestone this episode because this episode is furnished by something, Bits.
Our delusions.
Not to brag, but we were invited to a Roku brand event. Shout out to our number one fan, Sarah. Thank you so much. And we got free Roku t-shirts.
Free tees. Mine's still a little wrinkly.
I'm curious because you got a small and I got a large. And I think that we're like sort of roughly the same size in the world. And I'm curious how yours fits because mine feels like a kind of small large.
I'm going to tell you that I put it on about 30 seconds before I sat down in my chair. So I haven't even gotten the full look at myself.
What about the feel? How's it feeling under the arms?
It's feeling good under the arms.
Oh.
Yeah, because I'm not feeling it under the arms. And that's the main
You don't want to feel it under the arms.
Yeah.
I definitely went for more of a pajama shirt so I can just live in this shirt.
It's a good weight for that. Yeah, it's a good weight for that.
Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, shout out to Roku City.
We're looking fabulous in this royal purple. I think it really suits us. It brings out the like red splotchiness of my face really well.
Oh my God. Okay, well, we have a few more announcements up top. The first, thanks to everyone who followed us on Instagram at compliments_to_the_chef_pod after last episode. Huge spike in activity. And so we're just going to manifest something this episode, which is leave a review for us on Apple or Spotify.
We're hungry. You made us hungry for more praise. So, yes, if you're enjoying the pod, it really helps us out if you just leave us a star rating or a review. That's all, Nancy. We got to talk about this app. We didn't have any.
Well, no. Oh, we have one more announcement. You can do it.
We have a very fun second helping coming up this Monday. Yes, that Monday. We have none other than Chef Corwin Hemming coming on the pod. Ooh,
this is Corwin a great was delightful. Interview.
Yeah, this was a fun one.
He is awesome.
Yeah, no spoilers, but definitely tune in, check it out. Lovely guy. In a new chapter of his life, we're very excited for him to hear about it. So with that, Nancy, I think we had one leftover.
Yes, we have one leftover, and that is we added an item to the counter. And so I had to go back and do some forensic accounting, which really just meant going back in my Google Docs. And we have now added porridge to the counter. Now, you might wonder, Nancy, what counts as a porridge? We've seen a few. We've seen some breakfast porridges. We've seen congee. We've seen chawan mushi. We've seen a lot of different ones. And so as of episode seven, our porridge counter is at 4 instances of porridge.
Okay.
Which kind of feels like a lot of porridge.
That's a lot of porridge. I mean, what is that as of episode 6? So that's like 0.75 porridge per ep.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's our leftover. I'm like, oh, that's our leftover. But Bits, let's begin.
Wow, Nancy, episode 7, we are in Niagara Falls, or adjacent enough. We could not stray from that large body of water that Top Chef loves to put us on. We may be landlocked, but we found a way.
Top Chef loves boats, and I'm pretty sure that it's just Tom Colicchio loves boats. And this whole show for 22 years is just a long con to pay for people to go, him to go on boats.
We didn't eat on a boat this episode. Disappointing. But I don't think I want to eat in the Niagara Falls.
No, your food would get wet. Is that like a clean body of water? I don't know. Has history preserved the purity of Niagara Falls?
That's a good question. I would be inclined to say yes, but leftover?
Yes. I'm writing it down.
But can you imagine? Okay, then I do want amuse-bouche, but like, can you imagine if they had to prepare food that was, you know, the elimination challenge, like make a meal that can be enjoyed in Niagara Falls, knowing that it will get absolutely sopping wet on your plate. Like, oh, I prepared a dehydrated XYZ so that it would like rehydrate.
Oh my God.
That reminds me. That was a freebie.
That reminds me of there was once a Project Runway challenge. Did you ever watch Project Runway?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Which we also need to talk about our trip to see Stacey London and Kristen Kish this week.
Oh my gosh. How have I forgotten? We've done so much this week. It's been a lot
in the name of the pod.
Chef week. But okay, to your point about like eat something that can be enjoyed in Niagara Falls, there was once a Project Runway challenge I will never forget because it truly was a stroke of genius that this guy created. But the runway show was in the rain. They like put fake rain in the studio.
Oh, I remember this.
And this guy put like it was a white, just like simple summer dress. But in the lining of the dress, he put tea bags full of powdered dye.
Yeah.
So that when it rained, the dye like dripped out. It sort of like it really dyed the dress. And it was the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen.
And that poor model is still purple somewhere.
Yes. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, let's talk about Stacey London and Kristen Kish. So shout out to Kristen Kish, book launch week.
Woo!
Woo! We went to the 92nd Street Y, the center, the epicenter of culture in New York City. Yes. For those who don't know, the 92nd Street Y is an incredible performing arts destination. It's also the most exclusive preschool in the United States. It has a lower acceptance rate than Harvard. Fun Whoa. Fact.
Do you think we could get in now that we're No. a little smarter? Okay.
No. Literally no.
There is an age limit.
There is an age limit, and no Da Silva has ever gotten into the 92nd Street Y.
Wow.
You know, we're still a little butthurt about it. I can't believe I just said butthurt. Oh, my God. So off-brand.
Well, we're recording in the morning. Things are weird.
It is 7 o'clock in the morning. Okay, we're going to move right on from that to discuss the episode. Bits, what was your amuse-bouche reaction to this episode?
Oh, wow. I mean, if I hadn't already stated it. My amuse-bouche reaction, two words, Wiley Dufresne.
Wiley Dufresne.
The most dastardly Dan in all of molecular biology. I'm sorry, gastronomy. I don't know why, but Nancy and I have an obsession with Wiley Dufresne.
Wiley Dufresne. We have been to Stretch Pizza. You and I went to Stretch Pizza. We have eaten your pizza. We went to Stretch Pizza after the Celino and Barnes musical.
And it was, I thought it was respectably solid. But Nancy, I will say, I looked up the review, the New York Times review, the stinking New York Times review. It got a 1 out of 4 stars. I was like,
what?
New York Times does not need to be going here. That is not what this is for. This is a pizza place. They're like, at least the salad's good. I'm like, shut up. Get
Wait,
out of
why
the
did
church
they give it a 1 out of 4? They said the pizza was bad?
They were like, it was fine. I was like, I didn't read it. I scanned it, but they
Dude,
were like really into
respect your
the
elders.
Salad.
That's Wiley Dufresne you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's one of the he truly is one of the most important chefs of the 21st century.
Let this guy have a silly little fast casual pizza spot.
Yeah, we're all just cashing in, you know? Yeah. Like he toiled for years at his restaurant, which I'm sure, you know, he'd probably charge a ton of money, but like, you know, low margin business. Let him cash in. Let him like experience the fame that all of these other guys experience.
Yeah. Agree.
Tom Colicchio is out here like hawking meal prep kits on Instagram. Love the man to death, but like they're all doing it.
Yeah. Yes. Hello, 2025 called. It wants its opportunity to expand into new frontiers back. Okay.
We should always record at 7 a.m. I kind of think we're firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, this is according to my chronotype, which is, you know, what your body's like preferred time to act like do things is. This is my window to perform. So We should align our chronotypes.
I need to look at my chronotype. How do I find it?
We'll talk.
Okay, I'm going to leftover tell everyone, all of our fans, what my chronotype is. So,
but Nancy,
cool.
What is your amuse-bouche reaction if it hasn't already been stated in the 20 minutes of lead up to this episode?
Oh my God. My amuse-bouche reaction, sorry, I'm crying. This is so funny. My amuse-bouche reaction to this episode that I have written in my notes is, I'm happy to be back to an individual challenge. I understand that they have been cooking head-to-head, so they have been responsible for their own dishes. But it's nice to return to an individual. We had the group, we had the like partner challenge, then we had a team challenge. So it's nice to go back to one. I think we're getting to the part of the season where it's a manageable enough number of chefs where everything's going to be an individual challenge from here on out, with the exception of Restaurant Wars, which I think is next week.
Dude, really?
We're moving along.
We are cruising. I had the exact same reaction though, Nancy, when they said this is an individual challenge. I didn't know I was missing that and craving that. So 100% agree with you on that. Well, so let's get into the quickfire then.
Well, actually, no. Before we get into the quickfire, I actually think that we need to talk about something.
I think I know what you want to talk about.
So it's post judges table and we're in the stew room. They're stewing. If you don't know what the stew room is, go back and listen to one of our episodes where we define it. And Tristan sort of calls out Vinny and he says the thing we've all been thinking, which is like, dude, we get it. You worked at the Nomad. He actually said it in an incredibly respectful way.
For sure.
I am paraphrasing in a disrespectful way. But he was just like, we get it. You worked at the Nomad, but like, you got to stop cooking those dishes. And not only that, you have to stop saying that you're cooking those dishes, because essentially what you're showing – so Tristan took a much more diplomatic spin on it than I think I'm about to. And I know this is compliments to the chef, but in rare form, I think I might give a little criticism, which is Tristan is saying, like, you know, you're cooking other people's food. Mm-hmm. And then we get this, you know, moment where Vinny talks about the death of James Kent, who was a titan in the New York food scene, who was his – mentor. However, my interpretation of this is like, not only is he cooking other people's food, he's also sort of copping to the fact that he has not made an original dish once since he's been here. Mm-hmm. These are all dishes that he's made before. And of course, they all come with recipes locked and loaded. But when he says, you know, this is a dish I made at the Nomad, or this is a dish I made at this restaurant, those dishes are constructed by many people. So he is just taking the work of many people, including himself, but he is taking other people's work and he's making it in challenges. And he's just showing that he has not tailored his style at all to the challenges at hand. Yeah. And I think what we love in Top Chef is like people really going out on a limb and saying, okay, here's this crazy challenge. What do I do? He has never started from square one.
Yeah, like, you know, like Cesar has never made a pickle dessert before.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. I was being a bit long-winded there. Maybe my chronotype's not set for 7 a.m. But it just was a really interesting moment. But then this leads me to ask, Bits, do we have a second contender?
Oh, 1,000%.
For realizing they're not cooking their own food mid-season and then cooking their own food and excelling?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, it was stated very plainly. Mm-hmm. He was like, I am not cooking my own food. I'm cooking other people's food. It was, Nancy, this is the type of moment that led us to design this prediction in the first place. It has not come in such an obvious way in some time, but I just fist pumped. I was like, that is what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm looking for. But okay, let's get to the quickfire. So we arrive in the Top Chef kitchen. And there are some dirty dishes on the mantle.
Yucky.
Okay. We have arrived at a product placement challenge for Finish dish detergent, which we had last year as well. However, last year we criticized that we didn't really feel like it took into account dirty dishes at all. Do you think that they listened to us, Biz?
I forgot we had that take. Yeah, we were like, there was nothing to do with the dishwasher. Oh my God, Nancy, are we change makers?
Are we change makers? Did we perhaps submit our application to be part of the challenge team on Top Chef? Listen to our interview with Donnie Narquinez, executive producer.
Oh my God, it was dream team. Nancy, I loved this quickfire.
I thought it was so fun.
It was just the right amount of piqued my interest. Ooh, you know. Ooh. So anyways, to state it plainly, the challenge was that the chefs needed to use the tough stains as inspiration for their dishes. So they had to come up and pick a dirty dish. It was easy to kind of intuit what certain dirty dishes were, less so for others. Mm-hmm. Should I run down the list here of what dirty dishes we had?
Yeah.
So we had dried on guac. We had coffee. We had stuck on oatmeal. We had burnt greasy meat sauce. We had dried on pasta, lasagna, mac and cheese, and fluffy rice. Lastly, egg yolks.
And then there was one unpicked one, which was brownie.
Oh, brownies. Yeah. That one was tough. Nancy, what bowl are you picking? What plate are you picking?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't even know why I didn't anticipate this. I would probably have picked the meat sauce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going something tomato-based up there for sure.
I make a mean bolognese. I really do. And, you know, I think that you can do some great stuff with it. And I think Lana did. Why don't we talk about Lana's dish?
Yeah.
Lana made eggs in purgatory, which looked like a baked egg dish, with Italian sausage and tomato sauce. Yum. Yummo. Mm-hmm. Would eat.
We saw Cesar come out with like another, I think he was riding high off of his sort of ingenuity last week around the aforementioned pickle dessert.
Yep.
And he was taking it in a very cheeky direction. He had the coffee and he was doing like a cured salmon with coffee on top to give the sort of illusion of a cup of cappuccino, which was very clever. But we, you know, myself, some of the chefs were like, I don't know what the vision is there. I mean, I trust him. He's got a good
Yep. What I will say, he also had a coffee crumble added to the counter. This was a huge counter episode.
Oh my God.
So get excited. Yes, he had a coffee crumble, a coffee mustard. What is that? What is that?
I don't know. Do you think you can just call stuff? Or does it have to have – is it like the – what is it? The ship of Sisyphus? Or no, I'm thinking of – I'm merging two things.
Yes, you are.
The ship that is basically – is it even the ship if you've now taken off all the pieces? Like, is it even mustard if there's nothing to do with mustard in it?
Yeah. That was – I am so curious about what coffee mustard is.
Yeah.
But we had some other awesome dishes. So, unfortunately, Cesar was on the bottom with that dish. The other two players on the bottom – the first was Bailey, who got guacamole. She made a salad with trumpet mushrooms, celery, avocado, agave, cumin vinaigrette. They said it was a good salad, but it was not reminiscent of guacamole.
Which a lot of people not getting the reminiscence right. One that didn't really do it for me, if I'm being honest, wasn't on the bottom. Schwai. Schwai went mac and cheese, but was like a rice cakes and cheese. That to me, and I know I'm like the queen of, you know, gumminess, one texture kind of stuff. That felt too one texture to me.
Oh, I was digging it. I think I would have really enjoyed that just because it seemed really cheesy. And like you put cheese on a carb and I'm good to go. But that is interesting that you weren't feeling that. The last one on the bottom was Paula, who got lasagna. She made like a layered veggie lasagna, essentially. And I think they thought that her it was vegan too. Her cashew ricotta was delicious, but everything else fell apart, unfortunately, for
her. She had a tough time of it.
She did. She did. Let's talk about the dishes on the top. So Massimo grabbed a tomato sauce plate, and he made a simple ricotta gnocchi with tomato sauce. Oh, this looks so good.
Yeah, it did.
It looked good in the way like just a perfect bowl of pasta looks good. Just simple, tasty. Yum. I would love to be Massimo's child getting picked up from school is what I'm saying.
Pick me up, please.
He does have a child, doesn't he? Yeah, he said he's separated from his wife. Or am I thinking of old seasons of Top Chef?
I don't think you are, but where are you going with this?
Because he was like, this is what you give your kids when you pick them up from school. And I didn't know if he was accessing a memory?
No, I
or saying this is what he makes for his children.
Yeah, I thought we heard him talking to his kids in an interview.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm watching so many seasons of Top Chef at once. It's actually gotten out of hand.
You rejoin the simulation.
Yes.
Tristan's also looked great. He was on the top. Yellow jollof rice.
Yeah.
I was nervous for him with the rice and the quick fire, but he knew how to work that pressure cooker. That's for sure.
Work that pressure.
Yeah. Tristan, they liked that he stuck with the yellow too. Like kept the yellow coloring.
Tristan is on fire. We need to go back and look, but I don't think we've ever had someone on this much of a streak in Top Chef history.
There's some serious dominance happening. What will be interesting to know, I think sometimes we see this and then for whatever reason, mid-season, something happens and they're totally destabilized. You know, I do think that there is – we see this kind of successful run in Top Chef. And then there's something that throws someone – I am not hoping for this at all. I just know when you're in it, it's – there's a lot of episodes. Yes. We got a lot of episodes ahead of us. So
yes, actually, Gregory Gourdet, who's on our Mount Rushmore, whose restaurant we will be eating in very soon. We're very excited. Thank you for your homecoming to New York, Gregory. But he had a similar like dominance early on. But I'm going to be honest. Something about Tristan this season is making me feel like he is unflappable.
Yeah.
Like they are loving every morsel of food he is putting out. He has not really missed.
Dude, you know what it is? We talked about this when we did our recap of season 6, Las Vegas, and we made this joke about Kevin, who was also a beast in his season. I think they have something in common in which they have a Slumdog Millionaire level of just life experiences.
Yeah.
Because every episode, Tristan is like, when I worked in the Balkans or when I worked in – I'm like, when the – like, how old are you? Like, are you Benjamin Buttoning this thing? Like – he has so much experience and a lot of it is very – he just clearly has been put into a lot of different contexts from a like cultural, culinary. So he's pulling out all the stops. And in, you know, comparatively to what you were saying earlier with Vinny, I do think a lot of Tristan's dishes come from experience, but it comes from a place of inspiration and just familiarity with sort of the base components of assembling like a specific flavor profile inspired by that point of point in time in his history versus like a full dish that he's cooked before.
Perfectly stated, Bits. Perfectly stated. I think that we maybe need to add a prediction category for the Slumdog of the season.
Yes.
He is our Slumdog this season.
He is.
I love it. Okay, we're still rolling through. And now that we're at...
Can we quickly to explain that reference for those who have not seen the movie Slumdog Millionaire? Because I've not listened to brood.
Every single episode.
Essentially, in the movie Slumdog Millionaire, you see this kid compete on the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show. But the reason that he is successful and ends up winning, I think, is because you're like flashback throughout the movie to all of these life experiences, which has led him to accumulate this vast library of knowledge that just so happened to have been, pulled together in his life because of all the, you know, these hardships, this and that. So he randomly has a ton of life experience that helps him to know every single question on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That is the context. It sounds a lot stupider when I state it plainly, but wanted to be clear on that.
I cannot believe that we started a Top Chef podcast, and in the year 2025, you just had to explain the plot of Oscar-winning movie Slumdog Millionaire.
But I guarantee some people have not seen that movie. Or forget, you know, like...
Yes, 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 yes. It just was so funny. I was like, how did we get here?
And that movie was like at least 20 years ago now.
Yeah, I remember trying to learn the dance that they do in the credit sequence.
J-ho, you are the reason. That was the Pussycat Dolls remix.
Yeah, Nicole Scherzinger, like in her first foray into serious music that isn't like, loosen up my buttons, babe.
Well, now she's on Broadway.
Seriously, Tony contender until she said some like questionable political views.
Oh, man.
Sad for her.
Just don't talk, you know? Don't start a podcast.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We are still in this quickfire and we are at a point in the season where there are few enough people where we can talk about everyone's dish. So let's continue out with the top and then we'll fill in the rest. So we had Tristan on the top. We had Massimo on the top. Rounding out the top, we had Henry, who made a rice ball filled with maple butter and oats. He had the dried on oats. They loved this. They thought it was delicious and nostalgic. Yum, yum,
that
yum.
That looks
yum,
good
yum
to me. Yeah. I think he deserved this one for sure. He takes away 10K in Finnish
quickfire cash.
Quickfire cash. Finnish fun money.
Yeah, I was going to say Finnish final funds.
Oh, that's a good one.
Love it. So let's talk about the other people in the mix. We got Vinny, who took egg yolks, and he made a Benedict Carbonara Hollandaise. There he is with that Hollandaise again. Served on challah. Yum. Yummo. The type of brunch that you can only have in your 20s because it will literally kill you otherwise.
Sitting heavy.
And then rounding this out. Actually, I think we've spoken about everyone at this point.
Yeah. Shout out to Vinny.
Shout out to Vinny.
Let's get into the elimination challenge because
enter Wally Dufresne into the Top Chef kitchen. Why I oughta.
I cannot for the life of me understand why nobody feels the need to say his name like that. How do you not? It's like when you hear a song and you like don't dance. Like that, if you can listen to music and like not like move to the beat, it is just innate. You have to say it like that.
We have a lot of serious people and you and I are deeply unserious. So I think that explains why. But anyway, so we are having a pizza party with Wiley Dufresne and Spike Mendelsohn. I just said it in a normal way. I had to force myself to. It was really hard. So the challenge is, you need to make pizza for 70 guests. And the pizza needs to push the limits of a pizza party.
The final frontier.
Can you believe we've never had a Top Chef pizza challenge?
No, that was the thought that entered my mind as well.
Crazy.
This seems so – I don't think I've ever seen them – I don't think we've ever seen them make pizza.
No. Sometimes we'll get an errant flatbread by choice.
Right.
But I don't think we've ever seen a pizza.
That was so bonkers to me. Yeah, that was incredibly crazy. And I will say that I thought it, to your point on the 70 people, our girl Bailey was sweating that number. Like,
yeah.
It reminded me in the Titanic, you know, the movie where the guy's like, this ship is going to sink. Like, or no, this, we need to go faster. We need to go faster. Like, he comes into every scene. Is like, we got to go faster. That was Bailey this episode with like, 70 people is a lot. 70 people is a lot of people to cook pizza for. I could not get that out
well,
of my head.
Okay, maybe we can talk about the 70 people. This is a question, not so much, or it's a thought. What did making it 70 people add to the challenge if those 70 people are not included in the decision making?
Great provocation.
Because to quote Bailey, 70 people is a lot. And it does change what they're cooking. But then those 70 people don't have any like importance.
But did all those people have importance in the earlier large scale challenge under the bridge?
No, but it was like a food festival. So the food was for, I don't know why I see it as different, but I do.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like I don't disagree in principle on what you're saying. It does feel different and I don't know why. I mean, I think it's always the case of just it adds a level of complexity to you have to do it successfully at scale. I think in the case of pizza, there is a serious art to the cook of it mm-hmm. that I think gets complicated when you're doing it at that scale. And that seemed to be sort of the thread that tripped a lot of people up here was the dough mm-hmm. and the like cook on the dough. So it... It may have had something to do with that. It also felt like the budget for 70 people was extremely tight this episode.
Yeah, they were sweating the budget.
Yeah, 250 is not a lot. And I thought it was interesting that if you're going to have that kind of like tight of a budget, I was surprised that that didn't factor in a bit more into the challenge itself where it's like, you know, cook – a pizza party with limited, like do the most you can with the least. I don't know. It you know, because is there editing of ingredient choices that go into that then that would have been better to
I mean, I think
state outright?
we saw, I think it was like Vinny got a ton of meat for his Reuben pizza and he was like, there goes my budget.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious why nobody made a New York pie.
Because they had to push the limits. So that's like definitively.
Yeah,
not
but they all made Neapolitan style, which like is not necessarily pushing the limits.
I mean, so is your criticism the type of crust, not the toppings, or what?
Yeah, no. It's just a thought. It's not necessarily a criticism. I'm just curious. Like, we got 10 pizzas, and none of them was a New York slice. I'm just curious.
I don't know that I'm that curious about that. I mean, that's sort of like to me the sort of core traditional pizza at a pizza party.
A Neapolitan?
No, a New York slice.
Yeah, I think it's possible to push the boundaries of a pie in a New York slice. There's nothing better than a New York slice. I wanted to see someone make a fucking New York slice.
Yeah. What is the foundational core differences that a New York slice offers this challenge
New versus York like slice the Neapolitan? Is like a big boy. Big
well,
boy.
So, but do you think then that there was maybe like ingredient scarcity that came into that, or like just the budget? Maybe.
I think maybe it was the pizza oven size.
That's
would be
true.
My
you
bet.
Even get it in there, yeah.
Those little outdoor pizza ovens are definitely not cooking a New York pie, but the indoor. I'm just surprised that nobody went for the platonic New York slice.
Yeah,
that's
it was
all
the
I'm
same
saying.
Sort of size. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think any of them had the skill to like manipulate that amount of dough.
Oh, I think maybe. Massimo could have done it.
I bet Massimo could have. Yeah, that's
he was
true.
Throwing it up there.
That's like
loved
a
it.
Lot. Well, I shouldn't say that. That was like not a polite way to put it, but like there's a level of expertise that comes with like getting dough to be a 24 inch diameter, you know?
Yes, yes. Well, let's get into what they actually made. We can go in order of presentation. So we have in our first group, Schwei, Tristan, and Lana. Schwei makes a scallion pancake added to the counter pizza. With cumin, Szechuan lamb, and mozzarella cheese and tiger salad. Oh, this sounded so good.
So good. Wait, how many scallion pancakes do we have now?
So glad you asked. We are at 3 scallion pancakes, so one fewer than porridges.
Okay, all right.
So putting that into perspective. But we have not seen the last of our counter this episode. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a moment. But so this sounded delicious.
Really did.
I kind of feel like we've had a dish similar to this at like some of the Thai places we go to.
Yeah. You know what the one thing on this dish that was kind of threw me was the mozzarella, actually.
Yeah.
I was surprised there wasn't any comment about like, it didn't need that. Reading the sort of like list of ingredients that stood out to me as like, wow, oh, interesting. There wasn't any
but maybe,
thought on that.
Maybe it did need that. Maybe it was tasty.
Maybe it did. Maybe that it was craving mozzarella. Mm-hmm. No, his sounded super good. Tristan's also.
I take a moment to talk about Tristan's Lama June? So Lama June is fucking delicious. It's like a really thin piece of like matzah almost, although better because matzah is disgusting. And it has this nice thin spread that he put on it. Traditionally, at least when I've had it, when I've gone to the Mediterranean. It's served like it's not so crisp that it has like the sturdiness of a pizza slice. And you actually put like sumac onions, arugula, and you squeeze a lime on it and you roll it up like a burrito and you eat it that way. And so I was – when he said he was doing Lama June, I was like, is he going to do it? Like, is he going to have them roll it up? Because that, to me, is pushing the limits of pizza right there. But he didn't. And that's okay because it sounded like it was still delicious. And not only was it delicious, he made an anchovy ranch.
Nuts for the ranch, which he also didn't like.
Yeah. What is it with him cooking things that he doesn't like and excelling?
I think he just knows what the dish needs. And I don't know. There's like this weird, just sort of extremely objective distancing that requires to just know I don't like this, but it's what this moment needs. So it is crazy, though. I'm excited to see that play out more and more.
Yeah, he's just so talented. But okay, so What did we think of Lana's? She made the honey nut squash, tamarind barbecue oxtails, buttermilk dressing with plantain chips.
Okay, tamarind oxtail barbecue sounds so good.
I know.
My only note on this was like, I didn't know that this needed the plantain chips. Mm. But this to me just sounded like a really interesting barbecue pizza. So I was a big fan of it on the whole. What about you?
I have never really been one for barbecue pizza, but I agree with you that I would have eaten literally everything that was made this episode. I need to put that out there. Like, these all sounded delicious.
Yeah.
In terms of what they put on them. So, you know, I'd try it. Yeah. What yes. the heck? In the next group, we have Henry, Cesar, and Bailey. Henry makes a pho-inspired pizza. Cesar makes a mole pizza. And Bailey makes a chicken parm pizza. Okay, a lot to talk about in this group. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's go in the order that you listed. So we have Henry, who was very, again, sort of the prep got him. Like there was some sort of like great external force that just bent him to its will. he ended up leaving half of his flour in the cart when he was checking out and realizing he was about to go over budget. So he winds up with less flour than he thought, which kind of started the snowball, I would guess. But then the real problem came when the next day his dough just hadn't risen at all. So it was just completely unworkable. He ended up having a ton of rice that he brought in his sort of supplies from home kit that we've talked about in the past. Chef Tessins get like, what is it, 20 something things that they get to bring with them. That can be like tools or I guess it can be food. I never really thought about it. I just assumed people would really only bring like gadgets and stuff. But yeah, you felt for him because it was so kind of on the nose of the way, you know, the prompt was given. For example, like you could make a sushi pizza.
Yeah.
And he sort of was like, I think, he was mad that it came across that way. You know, clearly he's more creative than that. And he was not hoping to be like, hey, that the exact thing you told me I could make, I made. I really like artistically or just from a vision direction, I thought his was super clever from like a taste profile to pizza perspective.
Yes. The thing that I was really confused about is when he described it in his talking head, he was talking about the vermicelli noodles, which I thought he was going to make sort of like a fried pancake out of vermicelli noodles.
That would have been really cool. That I totally missed, but that would have been – I think that would have gone a long way in terms of a grain or noodle-based base.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, actually the dough. But yeah.
Yeah, I just had this vision of like this really cool sort of like scallion pancake-esque bottom, but with noodles and then everything on top. But then I didn't see him like make or even attempt a vermicelli noodle. So I was just confused where that thread was lost from his talking about it in his talking head to the actual execution. So we may never know.
Wait, did we also get a tartare?
Because yes,
Gail,
we did.
When they served it up on the table, Gail was literally like, this is just a tartare with extra herbs. So yep. I think we got added to the counter.
We got added to the counter. He is our third and final addition to the counter this week. The tartare counter is popping off this season. We have 8 tartars.
Whoa.
Yeah, in 7 episodes.
That's a lot. Okay, so let's talk Cesar. I think similar to his quickfire performance, was really riding high on this. Okay, I'm going to be creative. I'm going to be innovative. He comes in with this mole negro pizza idea, which I thought was super clever. And again, similar to Henry's, was a smart, in my humble opinion, a smart way to take the sort of flavor profile of a pizza in a way that pushes the boundaries of pizza. So he ran into issues very quickly, though, because he had cocoa powder added to the dough, which ended up giving the crust. It made it difficult to cook, and then it made it just very bitter, which was unfortunate because the judges, I think Chef Mendelsohn was like, yeah, this we ran into this issue when we were trying to make pastries at our restaurant or whatever. Cocoa powder we found for cinnamon buns was really bitter or something to that effect. Like, they've been down this road. So it was this guy, the guy noted like, oh, this was the worst first bite I had all day, which sucks to hear. Felt a little harsh, but I don't know. What'd you think about this dish, Nancy?
Yeah, I think this was the type of dish that just needed a few iterations. Like, it was if he had just tried it, he would have said, I know, of course, he didn't have time to remake his dough, mm-hmm. but, you know, it just could have used with some a little R&D. And I think that he unfortunately did not have the luxury of R&D in this challenge. But I think the things that, like, the mole negro was good and the chicken thigh was good. It just, the cocoa powder in the dough was really his downfall. But now let's turn to Bailey, who made a chicken parm inspired pizza with quick chicken sausage, lots of cheese, tomato sauce. The judges felt like it was a little too heavy on the breading and that the bread itself was a little undercooked and that there was a ton of cornmeal on the bottom. So just like a few editorial choices that Bailey made, I think on the whole they weren't totally blown away, but I think conceptually this was a strong pizza and I think that the general audience enjoyed it. So I don't know. I mean, I think chicken parm sounds like a pretty natural fit. So I enjoyed seeing her come up with this, but it did seem like on the technical aspects of it, she just didn't get there.
See, I disagree. I actually think that chicken parm pizza is not pushing the boundary of pizza. Like, it is taking what is already on pizzas and just sort of calling it chicken parm pizza. So for me, this one did not – I was actually kind of surprised that – and maybe I'm alone in my opinion of this, but to me that was – this was not a reflection – this did not honor the true challenge prompt. It was – if I can go into a slice shop and get a version of this pizza slice – I don't think that satisfies the challenge. And I think you can go into a slice shop in New York and get a chicken parm slice.
Okay, you know what? You have completely changed my mind. I agree. I was not even taking into consideration the challenge prompt when evaluating. And now that I am, I agree with you. I think that we've seen this before and it perhaps wasn't doing anything that innovative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. And especially when you hold it up against, you know, Cesar and Henry, who both took a little stumble, at least they pushed it. I think that they were a much better example of like taking the challenge to heart. Really, yeah, this one kind of was set aside for me. And I'll actually use this opportunity to transition to the last three pies that we had, which was Massimo, Paola, and Vinny. And this was, you know, the sort of grand finale, I would say, right? Or at least in my mind, because you have Massimo and you have Vinny who are, you know, self-proclaimed Italian stallions, whatever. and Massimo in particular is a pizza master. You know, he worked in a pizza shop. He knows the drill. So starting with Massimo, he put together a Napoleon-style pizza with fermented parsley paste, potatoes, mussels, and clams. I loved the sound of this. I loved the look of this. It's giving the clam pie from Leo's. Ooh, however, yeah. I am still feeling like it's similar to Bailey's situation where it's like, I can buy this pizza out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that you'd hit the nail right on the head, and that's why he definitely seemed shocked to not be in the top three. And a little hurt, but he just went so classic. He even like cited a pizza shop in New York City, Una Pizza Napoletano, that he was, you know, inspired by and perhaps like made a similar dish to. And so I think that that strategy was not going to get him into the top, but it was going to get him good marks at least.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have Paola, who loves pineapple on pizza. I've actually never had pineapple on pizza. I know it's a big debate, but like it just, to me, it just feels like it would fall into the same category of mushrooms on pizza, which is like there's so much water content that it boils almost and it gets hot as the center of the sun. So that to me just doesn't feel appealing. But I digress. Let's talk about Paula's pizza. She made a pineapple braised pork, which I thought was clever, mornay sauce, chimichurri, and then she used a type of Argentinian like milk bread for her dough. And I think that unfortunately that bread was the downfall. I think it was really sort of oily and too soft, too sweet. It was not the right counterpart to the sweetness of what was on the dough. And then what was on the dough was just too large in quantity. And I feel like she really went for it with this. So I appreciate that. I really do think it was clever how she did the pineapple braised pork and a mornay sauce instead of, you know, just raw cheese. But unfortunately, I think it was just way too overwhelming. She also, I think, has made chimichurri a few times now. Or we've seen chimichurri a lot this season.
We have seen chimichurri a lot. It may require another retroactive counter. But yeah, this one to me looked very soupy. I'm like kind of a brat with pizza. If I can't pick it up and eat it, I'm getting really feisty right now. I'm getting progressively more critical as we move through this list. So with that being said, let's chat Vinny. He made a Reuben pizza, which, okay, Nancy, I want to pause here because we opened the episode with, you know, you got to cook your food. You can't kind of, with Tristan's very wise words on just a little bit of a provocation around, hey man, you know, cook for you, don't cook for other people, don't cook for the places you've been. And then we see Vinny cook a pizza that is very clever and creative, but is his brother's recipe. So
yes, Vince.
What were your thoughts seeing this? Yeah, like talk to me about where your head is at with that.
I had the exact same thought. I was like, Vinny, no, you're not learning. Like, I think in his mind, he is paying homage to his inspiration. And food has so many memories and is so tied up with people. So I really feel for him that he's saying, like, this is something that I made with this person. But he's got to cut it out. He has to show us that he has an original thought. Because to me, it just feels like he is constantly, like, not even taking inspiration from, but taking full ideas from others and then plating it. And again, I appreciate the thought, you know, it's the thought that counts, but we have to see some originality from Vinny next episode, or I think might turn a bit of a leaf on what he's cooking up here. And then the other thing that I loved was that Lana totally had his number. She was like, the pickle, is that to show them that you can do pickles? Like, she totally called him out and putting the pickle on there from last episode.
He did get a really fun point of feedback from Wally Dufresne, which was that the pie made me smile. So I think, you know, and this is a meta point too that I kind of zoomed over with all of this, but I do think that this challenge, you could tell Kristen was having a blast. Like, this was, I don't know if this was her idea or what, but she was clearly enjoying eating 9 pizzas. I don't know. That was a takeaway thought that I had, especially as everybody was enjoying Vinny's pizza. But one other kind of like meta observation I feel like I had on this episode too was that I think we've gotten now down to the numbers where I really didn't know. We got equal sort of screen time for all of the chefs this episode to the point where I didn't know who was going to be top and who was going to be bottom. You know, they were setting up a lot of threads at the top of the episode. They were continuing those threads throughout the elimination challenge. And until you really saw the pizzas at the table, it was really like any person's game. So once we flip to the judges' table, we have on top this episode Vinny, Tristan, Schwei. Talk to me about what we're hearing at judges' table.
Yeah, so I think that in general, everybody thought that Tristan's was a cut above. It was exciting. It was new. It was a great concept. And the anchovy ranch really pushed him over the edge. So I was really happy to see Tristan win. Vinny, again, he got a well-executed note. And then in my notes, I have in caps, but he's still not cooking his food. So we have yet to see him cook his food and win. So we're halfway to our prediction with Vinny. But again, I think that he did his dough well. He did his toppings well, the balance, the flavors, everything. And then Schwei was just a great delectable dish with the salad on top. That salad sounded so good. Nice and refreshing in the summer, and probably a really different bright bite from a lot of the bites that they got that day. So I think it was just being a counterpoint to everything else really set Schwei apart. But before we move on to the bottom, something that I do think we need to discuss, because you were saying like Kristen was having a blast. I think all of the judges were having a blast, primarily because they were expressing opinions on pizza, something that we all hold so dear. And the two opinions that we heard, first, there was just so much ragging on deep dish pizza, which I loved. It was so funny. And then second, we had a bit of a debate between fresh mozz and dry mozz at the table. And we learn that Mr. Tom Colicchio, the Italian-American stallion, prefers a dry mozz on his pizza, which I thought was so interesting because I do too, actually.
Yummo. Yeah, I agree with that assessment as well. Full agreement, actually. Like, I think fresh mozz is like, it just kind of sits there in a blob.
It just falls off all in one bite.
Okay. Yep. So let's chat bottom. So we kind of stress these Cesar, Henry, and Paola. Paula's just had, and she knew it, there was too much stuff on top. There was too many toppings. It was too heavy. The milk dough made everything just super floppy. It was like a brioche. The comment that Cesar got on his was just, like I said, where you lost me was on my first bite. Like, it's like pretty brutal. And then... unfortunately, Henry goes home. The feedback here was just they couldn't get over that he didn't crisp the rice on both sides, which I don't know. I mean, I guess I that was like a weird thing that everybody like ganged up on him for. But he tried to make lemonade out of lemons, and you got to give him credit for that.
Yes, I will say that I think that Tom really dug into Henry at this judge's table. He had the quote, "It was round. That was all you could say in how it approximated pizza." Like, really going for the jugular there, yep. Tom. But yeah, I think that they felt it was too much of a departure from pizza. It was a rice dish. So unfortunately, we see Henry go home. But Bits, I must ask the question, Henry's rice pizza sushi, would you eat that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would too. It's like a rice bowl, like everybody was saying. That sounds good. Yeah.
All right, which brings us to our final segment, a judgy table. Bits, would you like to go first or would you like me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, let me get up my timer. Bits, your judgy table starts now.
Green peppers on pizza. I think that that's so disgusting. I actually just don't like really any peppers on pizza. Maybe I'll extend it to that. But when I get like a sausage pizza, and it's got like those, you know, little slivers of green pepper and like the slivers of onion and the sliver. I guess where I'm going with this is that flavor profile on a pizza, not for me. I don't like the sausage pepper combo, and I especially don't like green peppers on it. The whole magic of green peppers is like when they're fresh and herbaceous to me, and you're just like putting them on a pizza and it's just sogging up and there's no salt. It just doesn't add anything. I hate it. That's my judgy table. That's my pizza opinion.
I completely agree, and I would extend that because I sort of alluded to this already. All vegetables on pizza must go. I don't like a single vegetable on pizza because they're so water-based. They just sort of like melt and lose form, and they always like come off in one bite, and it's like they're hot, and they don't stick properly. I am out on veggie pizza. Do not give me a veggie pizza.
Yes.
If any of these people had done a veggie pizza, I would not have eaten that. I would not have enjoyed it.
Yes. Oh my God. 100%. Yes. It is the water-based thing. And I don't think there has never been a vegetable I like. The only exceptions I'll make is for like a lettuce or a green. I love a fresh arugula, and I've seen kale work because it gets a little more charred, But yeah, I'm 100% with you on the vegetable pizza.
Yes, and when I'm eating pizza, I want a fresh salad to counteract the like greasy, yummy pizza, which I – it's no – you know, no qualms about the greasy pizza and the breadiness, but you need a fresh vegetable to counteract. And you are not getting that. And by the way, when you go to a real pizza party with a New York slice and pies, the vegetable one is always the last one. No one wants veggie pizza. Okay, I've now just done your judgy table for you. I'm sorry. I loved it. I loved it. I'm going to move on with my judgy table. Nancy, your judgy table starts now. I need to give a preface before I begin my judgy table, which is this has nothing to do with the episode, but it is just a food opinion that I have come to as of late. Chicken, get out of here. As listeners, faithful listeners of the pod will know, Bits calls me the chicken whisperer because when we lived together, I made chicken every fucking night. And honestly, until about August 2024, I still made chicken almost every night. I had chicken so much. I was single-handedly keeping Big Poultry in business. And then my taste buds changed. My feelings towards chicken changed. And just yuck. Do not put another chicken breast in front of me. I am so done. It is so boring. It is so flavorless. It can go wrong so badly. It's got like this squeaky texture sometimes. Chicken is just turning my stomach. It's boring. It's dry. Give me a meat with some real fat on it, baby. I am just so off chicken. I will shout it. I will not whisper it. I will shout it into the abyss. No more chicken for Nance. The end.
Goodbye.
How do you feel knowing that I'm done with chicken?
I'm feeling like I think this is going to be a good thing, right? Because you're going to have to kind of force yourself to find more recipes. You're gonna really expand your home cook game. And I feel like I'm going to be a very lucky consumer of that by association.
Thank you for that optimistic you. But anyway, okay, this brings us to the end of our episode. Tune in on Monday for our interview with Corwin. You do not want to miss it. And tune in next week for next week's episode of Compliments to the Chef. Bye.
Bye.